This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to AM. I'm Kim Landers. Residential aged care providers are warning that the industry could be about to experience its worst COVID wave since the pandemic began. There are infections in 857 facilities with more than 5,000 residents and almost 3,000 staff infected. And almost 300 aged care residents have died in the past fortnight, as Annie Guest reports.
Australia's elderly have been the worst hit by COVID, with almost 2,000 living in aged care facilities dying this year alone. Paul Sadler is the interim CEO of the Aged and Community Care Providers Association.
We're very concerned, based on the advice from the Chief Health Officer and other government sources, that we could see a wave of Omicron in aged care that will be as high as the wave back in January. In January, two-thirds of all aged care homes in Australia had active outbreaks.
The big fear for Paul Sadler is this will be worse than anything we've seen for the entire pandemic.
It could easily get higher. We are very concerned that we're going to go at least as high in terms of number of outbreaks as we did in January, and it could go beyond that level.
And that would set a new and dismal record.
That's correct. We are facing the risk now that we will have the worst outbreak affecting aged care since the beginning of the pandemic in 2020.
That must be an exhausting idea for aged care staff.
It's absolutely terrifying for the aged care staff.
The Federal Aged Care Minister, Annika Wells, says she's meeting more than 1,000 providers today to talk through the winter plan for nursing homes. It includes fourth vaccine doses, better access to antiviral medication, infection control training, and communication between providers and government. Geriatrician Joseph Ibrahim says little of that is evident on the ground.
What I think we're seeing is what we predicted months, if not years ago, that when the restrictions around COVID were relaxed, that it would be the most vulnerable populations that would carry the weight of the illness and deaths that we're seeing. And I think that we're now coming to live that.
Professor Ibrahim is also the head of the Health and Ageing Research Unit at Monash University, and he's urging the community to help protect the vulnerable by wearing masks and getting their fourth vaccine dose.
We need to think more than just ourselves. The quality of our individual lives depends on the quality of the life of our community, that we can't do things by ourselves.
The federal government is urging states and territories to keep mask mandates in aged care. But Professor Ibrahim says it's not broad enough.
And I don't understand why we haven't gone back to a mask mandate. Wearing a mask doesn't really hurt anyone. It's not that difficult to do. And there's long-established evidence now that it reduces the risk of infections.
Victoria is among the jurisdictions to have already ruled out community-wide mask mandates, saying there's evidence they may be less effective at changing behaviours.
Annie Guest reporting. Health officials and experts are trying to work out what to do with tens of millions of COVID vaccines that Australia bought but doesn't need. The federal government purchased roughly 255 million vaccine doses from Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca and Novavax, but only about 100 million have either been administered or donated overseas. Some experts say it's clear that, like many rich countries, Australia bought too many vaccines, and they hope the same mistakes won't be made again. Here's political reporter Tom Lowry.
The first few months of the pandemic were filled with uncertainty. Australia's borders were closed to the world and vaccines were being developed, but no one quite knew what would work and how much might be needed. So, like a lot of wealthier countries, Australia started buying up big. Orders were placed with AstraZeneca and Pfizer, then Novavax and Moderna. About 250 million doses would eventually be purchased, roughly 10 doses for every Australian. Dr. Deborah Gleeson is an associate professor in public health at La Trobe University.
Australia really participated in a bigger trend that we've seen worldwide of wealthy countries buying up far more doses of COVID-19 vaccines than they needed early on in the pandemic.
She says wealthy countries buying up so many vaccine doses early hampered efforts to get the vaccines shared with low-income countries.
We're in a situation now where 12 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been administered around the world, but the vaccination rate in low-income countries is still only around 20%.
Australia's last vaccine to be approved and rolled out was Novavax. By the time the vaccine hit pharmacies and GPs, 95% of Australians over 16 were already fully vaccinated. Of the 51 million doses ordered, only about 161,000 have been administered. Health Minister Mark Butler has already ordered a review of Australia's vaccine arrangements, to be led by former Health Department Secretary Jane Holton.
If it does turn out that we have a surplus, then I'd want to have a range of options in front of us as to what to do with any surplus vaccines we were contractually required to take.
Professor Brendan Crabb, who leads the Australian Global Health Alliance, says the government's approach to vaccine orders was understandable.
I'm easy on the government in this respect. In the emergency of a pandemic, it makes sense to have given ourselves a lot of options.
But he says that doesn't mean there are not lessons to learn.
We do need to review that very closely and decide how we can do it better next time, because there's nothing more tragic than to literally throw out life-saving vials of vaccine.
The federal government has already donated more than 40 million doses within the Indo-Pacific. Talks are underway with Pfizer and Moderna about buying new Omicron-targeting boosters. Dr. Gleeson says it's important wealthy countries like Australia don't approach buying those vaccines the same way.
We'll see the same sorts of bottlenecks in production and the same sorts of inequitable sharing happening with those vaccines unless wealthy countries are prepared to really think about what they've been doing and start doing things differently.
Dr. Deborah Gleeson from La Trobe University, ending that report from Tom Lowry. Users of the popular social media app TikTok are again being warned the Chinese-owned platform is harvesting vast amounts of their personal data. An Australian report has found the social media company requests almost complete access to the contents of a phone while the app is in use. Defence correspondent Andrew Green prepared this report.
Andrew, I'm sorry, you've had several questions. Andrew, I know, but you don't run the press conference, okay? Catherine.
Fun and wildly popular, TikTok's embraced by mainly younger devotees, sharing short and sharp videos among a billion users worldwide. Occasionally, older types who've already gone viral join in too.
G'day, TikTok. Merry Christmas from me and Bud and all of our family here at Christmas.
TikTok's estimated to be worth around $50 billion, but concerns are growing over how the Chinese-owned platform is using the vast amounts of data it's capturing.
We saw that multiple versions of the app sent data back to China. When we spoke with TikTok, they were very resistant to telling us what data was being sent to China, and they were very resistant to admit that the app does send anything to China. But after some pretty significant analysis, we're pretty confident.
Robert Potter is the founder of cybersecurity firm Internet 2.0. His team has just completed a technical analysis of the Chinese-owned social media platform and concluded it's involved in an industrial-scale data harvesting effort. Robert Potter says TikTok requests far more access to a user's mobile phone than Western apps such as Facebook or Twitter.
It can do things that are quite alarming and somewhat unnecessary to a normal app, including seeing all the other apps you have installed, accessing the calendar, all of your contacts lists, your photos, as well as scanning your entire hard drive and all external hard drives as well while the app's in use.
Last week, TikTok responded to a letter from Liberal Senator James Patterson admitting Australian user data was accessible in mainland China. He says this latest technical analysis of the app only heightens his concerns.
Australians will be deeply concerned to learn that TikTok not only has been accessing their data in China, but that the app's data harvesting tools are so expansive and excessive. All of it could be made available to the Chinese Communist Party at any moment, thanks to Beijing's national security laws.
TikTok insists its approach to user data is consistent with the wider industry and is in line with other trusted Australian companies such as banks and telcos.
Andrew Green. You might be familiar with the former Morrison government's so-called sports rorts saga. Well, a grant scheme set up by the Tasmanian Liberals during last year's state election campaign is drawing unfavourable comparisons. The Liberal Party decided which groups would get public funding, and the ABC has uncovered a series of examples of Liberal candidates being connected to the successful organisations. Alexandra Humphreys filed this report.
Oh, what a phenomenal catch.
Baseball is growing its membership across Tasmania, but at its only field in Hobart, there are no lights, they don't have their own change rooms, and volunteers last year pitched in to build the mound. Here's Baseball Tasmania president John Hayes.
We think that if we had more access to facilities and funding and things like that, we could grow the game considerably.
The organisation missed out on money from a controversial grant scheme set up by the Tasmanian Liberal Party at the last state election. In the lead-up to the election, under former Premier Peter Gutwin, the fund was used to make promises. Not that organisations such as Baseball Tasmania were told about it.
If we don't know it's out there, we can't apply for it.
Some with closer ties to the Liberals were more successful. The ABC can reveal Tasmania's new sports minister, Nick Street, announced a $50,000 grant for a CWA branch, of which a family member was treasurer. And one unsuccessful Liberal candidate in northern Tasmania was the head of St Vincent de Paul Tasmania, which received a $165,000 grant. Another MP announced a $150,000 grant for her daughter's rowing club. Tasmanian Greens leader Cassie O'Connor says the scheme is unfair.
We all want to see St Vincent de Paul continue to do its fantastic charity work. But this is a grant that was allocated without process.
Because the more than 200 grants were election promises, they were never assessed by the relevant department, instead allocated by an internal Liberal policy team. The fund wasn't costed by Treasury ahead of polling day.
Well, I think there's an arguable case that the money has effectively been misappropriated right from the word go.
That's integrity expert AJ Brown from Griffith University. He believes there needs to be an independent inquiry.
These individual conflicts of interest or apparent conflicts of interest just tend to reinforce that something has gone seriously wrong here in the allocation of public money for the good of all Tasmanians.
Professor Brown argues removing public sector oversight and letting political parties decide where to spend public cash is putting Tasmania on a path to political corruption.
Compared to the big scandals about rorting at a Commonwealth level and in New South Wales, it's clear that Tasmania has an even worse case of this disease.
The Tasmanian Liberal government stands by the promises, saying there are benefits across the community and arguing that organisations shouldn't be ineligible for funds because they're linked to a candidate. John Hayes just wants a fairer playing field across Tasmania.
We can't provide people with alternative sport opportunities if we don't have the funds to do it.
Baseball Tasmania President John Hayes, ending that report by Alexandra Humphreys. It's a story with a familiar ring to it, the demand for a vaccine outstripping supply. But in this case, it's the demand for the monkeypox vaccine that's now greater than supply in the United States as a global outbreak continues to grow. And some US experts are warning the government has missed its chance to contain the disease. Here's North America correspondent Carrington Clark.
There have been more than 1,800 confirmed cases of monkeypox in the US outbreak, and the disease has spread to more than 40 states. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, the former head of the Food and Drug Administration, which regulates vaccines, told CBS's Face the Nation, the situation is extremely worrying.
We failed to contain this. We're now at the cusp of this becoming an endemic virus, where this now becomes something that's persistent that we need to continue to deal with. I think the window for getting control of this and containing it probably has closed. And if it hasn't closed, it's certainly starting to close.
Monkeypox is a pox virus and is related to smallpox and cowpox. This strain is endemic to parts of Central and West Africa, but this latest outbreak has seen it spread to dozens of countries around the world with no sign it's petering out. It generally causes pimple or blister-like lesions and flu-like symptoms. It's rarely fatal, but can be very painful and leave permanent scarring. It spreads through close physical contact with lesions, as well as respiratory secretions shared through face-to-face interactions. It also spreads by touching objects that have been contaminated by monkeypox lesions or fluids. The vast majority of the cases that are being identified in the United States are within the gay male community, but Dr. Gottlieb says it's likely to have spread much wider.
We're probably detecting just a fraction of the actual cases because we had for a long time a very narrow case definition on who got tested. And by and large, we're looking in the community of men who have sex with men and at STD clinics. So we're looking there, we're finding cases there, but it's a fact that there's cases outside that community right now. We're not picking them up because we're not looking there. This has spread more broadly in the community. I wouldn't be surprised if there's thousands of cases right now.
The good news is there are two vaccines which were developed to target smallpox, but which are effective against monkeypox too. The problem is there isn't currently enough vaccine to go around. Washington, D.C. is dealing with one of the largest outbreaks of monkeypox in the U.S. Mayor Muriel Bowser says the city doesn't have anywhere near enough vaccine to deal with the escalating problem.
We've gotten just over 8,000 doses. We estimate that we need about 100,000 doses.
The U.S. has more than tripled its monkeypox vaccine doses since last week, with hundreds of thousands of new doses expected to be available soon. But it remains to be seen whether soon will be fast enough. This is Carrington Clark in Washington, reporting for AM.
For the first time in almost 30 years, an Australian has won golf's oldest championship, the Open, at the home of the sport, St Andrews. Brisbane's Cameron Smith played a blistering final round with a back nine birdie blitz to take out his first major win, as Rachel Mealy reports.
Brilliant, quite brilliant. What a back nine.
With that, Cameron Smith entered the history books. He's the first Australian to win the title since Greg Norman in 1993, which also happens to be the year of his birth. Smith shot a final round 8 under 64 to surge to the top of the leaderboard.
I'll tell you what, Charlotte, it was excellent. Just amazing control he has over his emotions, over everything under this kind of pressure.
The win's a significant career breakthrough for the Queenslander, who took just 30 shots to complete the back nine, including saving par on the notorious 17th hole, where he opted to putt around the bunker known as the road hole.
Cam Smith for par then to maintain his one-shot lead.
Oh, my goodness.
Cameron Smith says he's overwhelmed to look at the names on the trophy and see his own.
First and foremost, I want to thank the team back there, all their hard work, all the hard work we've done the last couple of years has really started to pay off, and this one definitely makes it worth it.
He was followed around the course throughout the day by a troop of loyal Australian fans.
Lastly, to you guys, the fans, had a lot of support out there, especially the Aussie guys. You guys really kept me going out there. Seemed like there was a lot of you guys out there, kept me plugging away, and this one's for Oz. Thanks, guys.
Ken Mackay is from Brisbane's Wontima Golf Course in Brendale. He says he's watched Cameron Smith's progress over many years and watched nervously throughout the night.
I don't know how he keeps his nerves of steel, because I was pretty much on the edge of my seat the whole night. And as it got closer and closer, I was trying to do everything I could not to wake the house up.
He says Cameron Smith is a humble, unassuming and worthy winner.
You hear all these stories about sports stars and stuff like that. He's really grounded. He's such a nice bloke. He always has been. He doesn't let things get to his head. And he's very giving of his time for both the members and the juniors at the club.
Cameron Smith is the fifth Australian to hold the famous claret jug aloft.
I'm definitely going to find out how many beers fit in this thing, that's for sure.
Newly crowned Open winner Cameron Smith, ending that report by Rachel Mealy. And that is AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Kim Landers.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Germany gets a large portion of its natural gas from Russia, but the Nord Stream pipeline that provides it has been switched off. And there's growing concern Vladimir Putin won't put it on again. Today, energy analyst Tom Marcik-Mantzer on how that could send not only Germany, but the whole of Europe into recession. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.